And we're here with another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. But we got our guest, and we're really happy to have Greg McPherson on. He's a pharmacist and author of Harnessing the Nine Hallmarks of Aging to Live Your Healthiest Life. His research is focused on aging process at the cellular level, and this work led him to discover ways to harness the nine identified scientific hallmarks of aging, which is the premise of the book. And I'm really interested because I also teach anti-aging and geriatrics at the Naturopathic College at the University of Bridgeport. So it should be kind of an interesting conversation. It's kind of right up my alley. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Eugene. Great to see you. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, great. So tell us a little bit about, when I first started teaching my anti-aging course, it was a long time ago, and the only thing that was really documented about anti-aging was done in fruit flies. It didn't really extend to humans at the time. We were looking at the CERT genes, which I'm sure you can talk about a little bit, and their effect on longevity and things like that. And they made it all the way up to primates with some of these anti-aging concepts like superoxide dismutase and all these interesting antioxidants, but it never really hit humans. But we know that there are groups of like the blue oasis groups of centenarians and people that live a long life. So I'm really interested what got you interested in this whole field.
Yeah, so Eugene, I've been in a pharmacist by trade, so that's what I've been doing for the last 30 years. And in the last decade, focusing on biotechnology, so really getting under the hood and understanding aging at a cellular level. Last 8 years, focusing most of my time on mitochondria, which are a big part of aging, but recently just widening back a little and just looking at the full cell and going, okay, so what's happening? What's the latest research? And coming across a paper that came out in 2013 called The Hallmarks of Aging, which is a paper which is actually a really important paper because it gave everybody, all the researchers around the world, targets to focus on around aging. So you'll be familiar with rapamycin, which is probably the most important molecule. Yeah, and that's really, I think, what I could call a 4-minute mile moment. Like once we actually understood we could break the barrier and people all of a sudden started running faster than 4-minute miles. And with the identification of things like rapamycin, which do have an impact on aging. And like you say, it's from anything from insects right through to primates, mice, dogs, etc. Every animal that or individual that has tried rapamycin will see some level of slowing of aging. And so this just opened up researchers' eyes to the concept of being able to pharmacologically alter the aging process. And so that's where I guess the book starts off, is actually starting to help people understand.
So explain, Greg, where that the target of rapamycin or the mTOR whole thing is, because that gets kind of dense for most of the listeners out there, not academicians like ourselves.
Yeah. So mTOR is like a master switch, and it gets turned on when we eat food, and when it's turned on, it triggers a whole bunch of cascades inside our cells, which encourage our cells to assimilate the nutrition on the food and build tissue. So the switch gets turned on when we eat. And then on the flip side, when we don't eat, it gets turned off. And if we don't eat for a little bit of time, like we do perhaps when we're fasting, then it switches the body into a mode where it gets energy from breaking things down. And so that gets really interesting and important, because when the body does break things down, it gets rid of the worst cells and the worst proteins first, and kind of puts those and breaks them down, gets energy and stores them. And then once we eat again, then the switch turns on, we build fresh cells and fresh cell components. And one of the challenges we have in the Western diet is that we don't actually turn mTOR off. We eat 3 times a day, we snack in between, and it turns out it's actually really important that we turn it off and inhibit that and give the body a chance to do some cellular housekeeping, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, that's an age-old concept, at least in naturopathic medicine, fasting. And, of course, societies did it very frequently back in prehistoric days, if there was feast or famine type of thing. So how does that tie in with our innate genetics as humans?
Well, I think it's just, you know, we are modern humans with ancient biology. There's nothing that's really changed since the times you're talking about. And so our bodies and our biology is just set up to do that. And like, there would have been times, perhaps, if you're out there, perhaps in the middle of an ice age, for example, where you might not have been able to find food for a few days. Or even if you could, it was mainly probably a little bit of meat and not so much vegetation and carbohydrates, etc. So, and we're really just set up so that the body goes into longevity mode, right? It's, you've got to survive to find that next bit of food. So when you think about it, it all makes a lot of sense. It's just that we've forgotten it. And so I think we're now at a time when we can start to understand these things.
So what are the actual nine? Well, let's go back. I mean, a lot of people think, can you really slow down aging? Greg, come on, that sounds like hocus pocus, or, you know, something that we, you know, the Methuselah theory, you know. But what do you think based on the modern research?
Well, I like to go backwards and before I go forward. And I talk with people about something called the germ theory. And most of us all know that, you know, you get a bug, you get an infection, then perhaps you take an antibiotic and you get better. But that's actually only been around for 130 years. The germ theory has been only well accepted. So right now, the exception to the rule is that you get an infection and you pass away, for example. But back then, that was just what happened. So with the germ theory, all of a sudden we had a target to understand, okay, what can we do about these infections? And it actually opened our eyes up to antibiotics, and we found that, and all of a sudden then we could solve the problem. So with the nine hallmarks, we're actually starting to see and find areas in our cells and in our cellular systems which can slow the aging process down, and it's happening. So a really great example about this is senescent cells, which everybody's familiar with now. And a senescent cell is a cell in our body that's stopped replicating for whatever reason. And when we're young, that cell puts its hand up, sort of secretes a few inflammatory molecules, and the immune system comes and sweeps it up and gets rid of it. But as we get older, that doesn't happen so effectively, and that was why we get an increasing burden of inflammation as we age. And scientists have now worked out that, look, we might be able to identify those cells and clear them out. And in a mouse model, they've done that, and they've got a 36% life extension by doing that. So there's absolutely proof now that we can slow this aging process down. And obviously, some of it's here and some of it's still under research. But I think we're right at the beginning age of increased longevity. And we've, like you say, the blue zones, those zones have given us clues on what we can do to live longer. Now we're getting in, and that's been sort of, I guess, good luck and good management. Now we're getting into a time when we can actually influence things and live healthier for longer.
In my course, we spend a lot of time on the glycation theory of aging, which is, you know, kind of like they call it the burnt sugar hypothesis. People have had maybe the experience of maybe cooking sugar or spilling some sugar on the stove, and it gets sticky and tenacious and hard to clean. And that actually happens in our body with excess glycation and sugar. And I think that is one of the big hallmarks of aging. I know in my course, how about in your book, you spend time talking about that?
Actually, sure, don't. They think it's the 10th hallmark almost. So it's definitely
the 10th thing. Okay.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. But yeah, it's like caramelization, isn't it, of your body? And it comes from just this overload of sugar, and it's just not good for our cells. I mean, I don't know if you experienced having a piece of, super rich chocolate cake or a super rich salmon steak, but you get to a point where you just can't eat any more, and it just feels so rich. Well, when we're overloading on sugar, that's kind of how our cells are feeling, and it's not good for them, and it just puts more sugar and some of it's metabolized, but a lot of it ends up caramelizing bits of our cells, yeah. And it's not so good for us.
And it shuts down proteins, and cell membranes don't work, and it's like part of the whole cell membrane hypothesis of aging. You know, there's a lot of things that we all have. But tell me about your nine hallmarks. They're maybe a little different from my course.
Yeah, sure thing, Eugene. So the first three relate to our DNA. And, you know, when I'm back at pharmacy school, I just got the picture DNA was this you know, the information for our cell, just what coded who we are as human beings. But it's an incredibly dynamic molecule, and it is opening and closing, and it's just making code available for our protein making machinery to make. And it is operating in like an incredibly challenging environment. It's almost like it's a 3D printer working inside a furnace. It's with all the UV pollution and the pollution from our environment and what we put in our bodies with food, and then also just the oxidative stress that we accumulate with age. It can break 50 to 100,000 times per day per cell, which is just nuts. So our body has incredible repair and maintenance processes. You mentioned the sirtuins earlier. These are genes that just constantly monitoring our DNA and looking after it. But, you know, they can do their job perfectly for a little while. But after a while, even when they do it perfectly, there's the occasional error and break. And so what that does is it's if you've imagined the old CD, or even if you don't, the streaming music, where it sort of stops every now and again because of the streaming difficulties. But that's kind of happens to our DNA as well. It gets a little scratched, and that means our protein manufacturing machinery don't make those proteins quite as well as they used to. Mm-hmm. And that just slowly builds up over time to accelerate our age. And if we look after our DNA, specifically with good care and attention, eating well and exercising, those sorts of things, looking after our sirtuins, then that's a key thing that we should be doing. And and the other element of our DNA is these telomeres. These are the caps of our DNA. These okay. They shorten with time, and the shorter the telomeres on your chromosomes, the more chance you've got of having some sort of illness. So That's a key one.
The telomeres are interesting. There's been I remember reading, I assigned that as one of my homework assignments for my students, naturopathic doctoral students, to look up the current literature on how to lengthen telomeres. So what happens when the cell reproduces? And tell us about what this telomere is, sort of like this dynamic lengthening or shortening thing that determines the replication, amount of replication of the cells.
Yeah, so you know some cells have an enzyme called telomerase, which is something which extends the telomeres, and these are cells like our stem cells, and they, it was really important we keep them in good working order, so the body actually constantly tops up the telomeres. But for many other cells, the average I think is around 60 reproductions, and then those telomeres get so short that it forces those cells into stopping, and the body removes it. So it's a mix, and you want to keep your telomeres looking as shiny and new as possible. And it's really interesting, but if you how you manage your stress has a big impact on your telomeres. Mm-hmm. So if you're you've got your twin brother there, and he's not managing, you both have got the same level of stress, but you're managing it better, then your cells are going to be looking in better shape for that, which is, a really interesting mind-body link in terms of sort of how we feel and the manifestation of that on our body. But there are things also you can do. Exercising is very good. There are things like astragalus, which is a herb which supports telomeres, and other things like good, like fish oils, these sorts of things, which actually lower the stress in the cell, and that just helps support longer telomeres.
Yeah, some of the things they found, my students, vitamin D increases telomere length, better sleep increases telomere length, meditation for a 3-week practice. So, you kind of leaving behind the stress and at least managing, like you said before. And I think that there's even some nutraceuticals and I believe some of the age-old resveratrol and some of these botanicals also seem to play a role with the telomere.
Yeah, that's right. The resveratrol and tiristilbene, these are molecules which are sirtuin activating compounds. And so these sirtuins are so important. We've got seven in our cells and of different types of them, and they do all slightly different things. But keeping them activated, giving them support. And then obviously we've got this new thing called NAD, which is an enzyme in our cells. Sirtuins need NAD to operate. So getting healthy levels of NAD, boosting molecules into your system, again, is a really important part of this, the nine hallmarks of aging and actually supporting your cells. And, you know, we're fortunate, to be alive, I guess, right now when we're starting to understand these things and we're starting to have access to compounds which can help boost our NAD, which we really didn't have before.
Interesting. So NAD is at the end of the whole tryptophan pathway, because tryptophan is a important amino acid that can, if we're low in niacin and NAD, we can actually manufacture it through that whole tryptophan pathway. But you know what's interesting? There's a step right before NAD that's actually very dangerous called quinolinic acid, which can actually destroy the cells. So it's important that we kind of keep going all the way to the end. And I measure quinolinic acid in a lot of patients and find that it's found in neurodegenerative diseases, anything from Parkinson's to Alzheimer's. So it's kind of interesting. So you want to make sure that you go all the way to NAD or just take it so that you don't... You allow the body not to go through that whole complicated quinolinic and quinolinic acid pathway to make NAD. It's a very easy supplement to take, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the research is coming thick and fast on that particular molecule in terms of its effectiveness. And it declines in function, and you almost, like, if you look at it from a sort of a time graph, your mitochondrial function declines almost on the same curve as your NAD decline. So this is the beautiful, advantage or opportunity we have with this molecule now, is if you top it up, then you can fire up these mitochondria. And mitochondria is actually another of the nine hallmarks of aging, mitochondrial dysfunction. And okay. So, yeah, we certainly, these are mitochondria, are a cellular battery, and they do an incredible job in terms of converting the glucose or the food we eat and mixing it with the air we breathe and turning it into ATP, which is a pretty important molecule. If we didn't have it, we'd be gone burger in 60 seconds. Mitochondria function is just so important on many levels.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of things destroy these powerhouse of the cells? I know there are, we have them, our body supposedly regenerates, can regenerate the mitochondria with certain supplements that I've read, like PQQ and things like that. But go back to more basics. These mitochondria, they are, is that where the whole energy cycle happens? Explain what the mitochondria do to the listeners out there.
Yeah, certainly. So mitochondria are just fascinating little organelles inside our cells. They actually, they're thought to have come from bacteria that our cells did a bit of a deal with a billion years ago. And the deal was, we'll keep you nice and warm, and the mitochondrial part of the bargain was to provide energy for our cells. And they think it's actually when this little deal did, it was the deal of the millennia, and it actually triggered a huge amount of the diversity of life, because all of a sudden our cells had more energy to do things with. So our mitochondria, their main job is energy, but they do so much more. It's almost like the tail wagging the dog at some points. I think that the mitochondria actually call the shots. So these mitochondria are like a furnace, if you will. They take in this, the energy from and glucose and oxygen, as we talked about before. And it's a wee bit like a car engine in that you put gasoline and that gasoline gets burnt with oxygen and you get energy from your engine, but you get exhaust coming out the end. And the exhaust in mitochondria, of course, is free radicals. And mitochondria make like 90-95% of the free radicals in our cells. And that's all good until it's not, because as they get a wee bit older, they leak free radicals a little bit more. It's a wee bit like an engine that gets out of tune. Those free radicals damage the mitochondria in terms of slowing it down, and that doesn't produce as much energy. And at the same time, it's these free radicals are leaking into the cells. And at one stage, a leading theory about aging was called the mitochondrial free radical theory of aging, and that's been debunked. It's not that it doesn't work, it's just that it's part of the whole picture of what contributes to aging. And again we're now fortunate to be able to look after these mitochondria. Well, we've understood what we need to do with them. First thing is exercise. I mean, it's fundamentally the biggest intervention you can make for anti-aging is when you exercise. It just helped your mitochondria increase in number. They're fascinating that, you know, if you have got energy requirements in one part of your cell, then the mitochondria actually migrate over to that part of the cell and deliver energy where it's needed, replicate more when they need more energy. In different cells, you have different levels of mitochondria. So in your heart cell, it might be up to 50%, maybe more of the content of that cell is mitochondria because you need so much energy. Whereas in your skin cells, for example, you might only have maybe 100 or 200 mitochondria doing their job. So they're, yeah, super interesting. One of my favorite topics.
Wow. And so what about in patients with like terrible chronic fatigue syndrome, There are tests that I run to look at the, you know, kind of indirectly look at the mitochondrial health. And we find that, you know, sometimes their CoQ10 production's low. I mean, you're supposed to manufacture CoQ10 from tyrosine and SAMe and B vitamins and pantothenic acid, and then you make it. But a lot of times people are on statins and things and drugs that shut down this mitochondria. You know, I don't think people realize the implications of statins, the worldwide implications of statins and what it does to the aging process. Mm-hmm. But then, so sometimes the mitochondria is not salvageable. Tell us about some new research on how you can, besides exercise, rebuild the mitochondria or start from scratch.
Yeah, so there is, because just to go back a wee bit, Eugene, you're quite right, statins can have an impact on your mitochondria just because they interfere with the pathway which makes CoQ10, which is an important coenzyme inside our mitochondria. But these little organelles initially were bacteria, so sometimes antibiotics can affect them. But there are a whole host of drugs that can affect them as well. So they are quite fragile, and I'm sure that just some of the environmental toxins and loads that we have and just our environment these days just are not favorable to these mitochondria. So in terms of what we can use, like PQQ is absolutely something there. It just stimulates mitochondrial biogenesis and just helps the body make more mitochondria. CoQ10, absolutely. And we wander back to that little molecule called NAD as well, which seems to have quite an impact, a positive impact on them. But if you reduce the oxidative stress in the cell as well, I'm a huge fan of something called astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is a antioxidant which comes from algae. And algae sit on the top of the water and get hammered by the UV rays. And so they've been really smart. Their immune system has built something called astaxanthin. And it turns out that the membrane format and size in algae is very similar to the membranes in our bodies. And so this particular antioxidant goes and parks itself up inside the membranes around our cell as well as inside our mitochondria, and just gives it that extra bit of support that helps it just survive it a little longer. And really interestingly, those long-lived animals like the naked mole rat and birds, certain birds that live a long time, their mitochondria is actually is more robust in terms of its membrane than ours, for example. And so it's thought that contributes to them living a lot longer.
Interesting, like my parrot.
You got it.
My parrot, yeah, she's amazing. So tell us about a few other things. So we talked about DNA, and by the way, folks, there are some tests that, you know, doctors can run to see if your DNA has been hammered or not, or how patent your DNA is. And I've been running that test for a long time, but it's kind of science has caught up to our using it in functional medicine, the 8-hydroxydeoxyguanosine test. Can you do that over there in your country?
Yeah, we can actually. We're doing it with we've got some products that we're working on right now that we're doing that test on. And the other element, Eugene, is the Horvath clock, the methylation clock on our DNA, which is relatively new to us all. It's essentially it as we get older, our DNA accumulates this like junk, if you will, methyl groups on it, and it's actually almost like really well correlated. The more junk we've got, to the amount of time we spend on the planet. And the beautiful thing with this discovery is that we've learned that it's completely plastic. We can modify it, and so by doing things which help with aging, like exercise and eating well, but also taking supplements, we can start to actually measure the impact immediately rather than having to wait 100 years to see whether something works or not. So that's quite exciting.
Now, you mentioned an interesting comment, which I thought was fascinating, about the antioxidant theory. I thought that the antioxidants that we manufacture in our body, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. If our body's spending precious resources and energy to manufacture some of these endogenous antioxidants like melatonin and superoxide dismutase, catalase, glutathione, things like that, those are like the supreme ones. And then the dietary ones, which are lower on the, you know, the pecking order, flavonoids, stilbenoids, and our many nutrients, selenium, manganese, zinc, that helps us make the SOD. Those are important, but you need them in a lot less than your body making a decision to make the antioxidants. What do you think about that?
I think you're spot on. It's you work with, I guess, what you've got, and to provide as much antioxidant protection as you can. But I think as we age, we just get that those defenses become overcome. I think that's the issue. And what a lot of people don't know, Eugene, you'll know this, but we need free radicals. Everybody takes antioxidants and they're swallowing them like crazy because they want to get rid of these pesky, horrible things called free radicals. Well, you know, the body's such a perfect machine. It actually sits there and goes, I want some free radicals, because the body uses it for our immune system. So you're going to kind of imagine our immune cells kind of firing free radicals at bacteria and viruses as part of the first stage of our immune system, whilst we figure out what's wrong, and the more evolved adaptive immune system comes in and takes over. But initially we need those free radicals. And the other thing that the body uses free radicals for is communicating inside the cell or between cells. And so when you take antioxidants, you could spit like putting an earmuff on, you can't hear that communication happening so well. So this is why some people, there's been studies showing that in certain antioxidants, if you take them, you actually have a higher risk of dying because you're actually muting that important system. Wow. So, and then I always loved a paper where it showed a group of men in their 70s, and there was two arms. Both groups went to the gym. One group took antioxidants, both groups got fitter. But the ones that were taking the antioxidant didn't get the muscle gain that the ones that weren't taking it. And so this again, when you put a bit of stress on the body reacts, and in a good way, it rebuilds. Or it could be that it increases the amount of glutathione that it's being produced, or whatever. It's an important system. And of course, there's that Goldilocks zone, and if we go above it, then that's when our our body starts to have experience oxidative stress, and if you have that for too long, then you get inflammation, and if you have that for too long, then it's disease. So it's about sort of keeping it in that Goldilocks zone. And what's I find really interesting is, you know, these pilots that fly in the skies above us, you know, when we travel, we can get quite a bit of damage from the solar radiation, which is a bit more it hits us a little easier in those planes. But the pilots that are up there all the time, they have their natural antioxidants upregulated, so they actually adapt to it and don't get the damage. So this is the body, you know, this perfect body we've got, doing its job.
Interesting. Yeah. What are some of the other hallmarks now?
Yeah, so there's something called a loss of proteostasis, and that's just essentially about making proteins. Our body is apart from water and membranes, it's all proteins, and these are the molecular machines that our body uses to operate. And proteostasis is just the body keeping those proteins in good shape. It's and when a protein breaks, for example, the body gets clears it out, and when it's in manufacturing it too, just keeping that that nice even process going. So as we get older, we tend to sort of gunk up a little bit. These proteins don't work so well. If we don't switch off that mTOR switch we're talking about, then the body isn't triggered into clearing it out. And so it's a little bit like, you know, you're not doing the housekeeping at your place, and you know, a few boxes sort of in rubbish build up, and it's before long, if you leave it, then it's a little hard to get through into the kitchen, or it's a little bit harder to move around the cell. And so this describes what happens as we age. We just build it. We're just not as effective as cleaning out the junk as we used to be. So that's a really important thing. And again, exercise is really useful for that, triggering that process of just clearing out proteins, breaking them down, and letting the body build them up again. But fasting appears to be super important. And then we've got this beautiful thing called a molecule called fisetin, which is a natural product, comes from strawberries, and that helps not just with proteostasis, but also it helps remove those senescent cells that are building up as we age.
That's interesting. So something from strawberries seems to, it's strawberry season here in just about strawberry season here in the States, in the East Coast, at least where I'm from. So looking forward to those coming up. But yeah, so there's real good, interesting information on that. Tell us a little bit about that, a little bit more information about that.
Yeah, so this is the senescent cells is another part of cellular senescence, is another one of the hallmarks. And it's essentially our body's not removing the cells that are not useful to it anymore. And when those senescent cells sit in your body, they're like the neighbors you don't want. They're noisy, they're smelly, they're just a pain, right? So they try to remove themselves by putting their hands up and excreting inflammatory chemicals. But that just affects the cells around it, and if they're not cleared out, then causes us problems. And so what scientists have learned, there's a few molecules that help remove those senescent cells, and myfisetin turns out to be one of them. So you can either take it, you know, a regular dose, or you can take a big, maybe 2 or 3 grams a day for a few days, and it just helps the body identify those cells and clear them out. So I'm a big proponent on taking it daily, just because it clears your senescent cells, but there's some really great data on just the brain benefits of this molecule. So that's a big part of my stack for sure. And the other thing I'd love to talk about, Eugene, is a new molecule called hobamine, which comes from Himalayan Tartary buckwheat.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That whole... When in one of my urology classes, I came across the application of the whole buckwheat family is the Polygonaceae family. And, you know, when you look at that family in traditional Chinese medicine, polygonatum, you find that it's the highest level botanicals for aging and senescence come from that family. And I remember reading something about some old naturopath said that people with you know, aging and things like that should eat lots of buckwheat. And I thought that was kind of fascinating. And then I read about that molecule, tujoba, which is different from resveratrol, which is another part of the buckwheat family. Quite a bit of resveratrol has been discovered in those things. Yeah, tell us about this very interesting phytochemical.
Yeah, it's like antioxidant that's not an antioxidant, and it's like a third generation antioxidant. So if you imagine if you're sitting in your cell, sitting in your cell, and a free radical takes like a bite out of a bit of your cellular machinery. Well, actually what happens is that your cellular machinery becomes radicalized. It actually becomes a free radical in its own right. And then it just turns around and wants to grab a piece off the bit of membrane or machinery next to it, and you get this domino effect of damage that rolls down your membranes or your cellular machinery. And so scientists were going, you know, this looks interesting. What do we do? How do we deal with this? And they did a bunch of testing with a whole bunch of phytochemicals and found that this tujoba is one of the most effective molecules to actually stop the secondary damage from oxidative stress. So what that means is it's almost like you take a domino out of the long line, and when the first domino falls, then the rest stays standing. And it's essentially a way for us to protect our membranes and cellular machinery, but without affecting the free radical messaging and usefulness of free radicals that perhaps antioxidants interfere with. So the research is coming thick and fast on this particular compound. It shows it's very useful in neurodegenerative diseases, very useful for atrial fibrillation and heart health issues. So and it's only just really getting started. But what we know is it's safe. And it's really the first time that we've been able to really like protect our cellular membranes and machineries from these things. And it's a bit of a mouthful, but it's a reactive carbonyl species scavenger, which is kind of new, and it's one of the most effective ones that we've found. So it's, as soon as I learn about it, I started taking it. It's such an interesting molecule.
Yeah, I just kind of learned about it recently, and it's kind of funny. Then your book, I saw it in your what you wanted to talk about, so I was fascinated to hear any experiences that you might have had, or if you know patients or folks that have been using it.
Yeah, so my experience with it, and we've got a group of people that are taking it right now, and there's just a level of I want to say energy that you get from it. It's not a caffeinated type energy. It's just a I can just keep going type energy from it. So it's some people didn't feel anything particularly different about it, but I think it's like sunscreen for your cells, right? It's something there that just sits there, and it's just going to protect you long term. For me, if I can have some of that molecule hanging around my DNA, for example, it's just going to lower the chance that something breaks in a way which I don't want. So, I think it's something everybody should add into their insurance program, if you will, in terms of trying to win that lottery of life.
Any other anti-aging gems you can leave with us as we get to the last, 8 minutes of the program or 7 minutes of the program here?
Yeah, look, I think it's just a matter of for people that have got the book Harnessing the Nine Hallmarks of Aging, and it's a healthy handbook, essentially, which goes through and explains the latest thinking on what the causes behind aging are. And so we do a bit of biology, we go a little deep at times, but what we do at the end is we come up with a strategy for people in their 30s, 40s and 50s that that you can adapt. And you know what you do in your 30s you don't need to be doing in your 50s, so you know what you do in your 50s can be quite different. So it's just
let's talk about 50s and 60s. Yeah. So it could make it pertinent to someone maybe who's listening out there.
From your 30s, then it's definitely worthwhile taking this thing called Hobamine or Tujoba. And just providing and protecting your DNA as long as you can. And then if you get into your 40s, it's about just boosting your mitochondria because they decline around about that time. And then in your 50s, I'm just a huge proponent and just supporting autophagy, helping clear senescent cells out. So that's about your fisetin. It's about fasting. And it's just making sure we just keep moving and exercising. Those are the key things. But with things like fisetin, with which the data just keeps coming, and this, I just noticed the other day on clinicaltrials.gov that that the Mayo Clinic is doing testing with fisetin in older adults for COVID. There's potentially that just helps clear some of those immunosenescent cells, those older immune cells, and it's possible that we overreact to COVID because we've got a bunch of senescent cells in our immune system, which so that'll be interesting just to see if that clinical trial plays out. But that could be a really interesting another tool in our toolbox to help people perhaps lessen the impact of COVID.
Now, what type of fasting, Greg, seems to be the best one for anti-aging? I mean, I've seen some really interesting research in the 90s from Scandinavia that fasting can be as strong as 20 milligrams of prednisone for patients with rheumatoid arthritis, and they all their indices of inflammation go down. It's just incredible fasting. Right? But usually they're fasting for at least a week on water and broths. And is it important to stay off of calories when you're fasting? A lot of people, they think doing a protein powder is a fast. What's the research say?
It's around 600 calories is enough to trigger your body into thinking it's fasting. So if you can minimize to 600, it means that you can have a little bit to eat, but the body still thinks and gets triggered into that fasting process. And you're absolutely right. I've seen some incredible data and graphs of people with autoimmune conditions resetting their immune system and reducing inflammation significantly by having a fast. And you need to do it with your doctor because under medical supervision, because you can do yourself damage when fasting as well. So it's actually just a conversation to say, okay, how do I get those macronutrients, the really important nutrients that we need, without triggering the calorie that comes along with it normally. And so you sit down and have a chat. I recommend it. I do it once every 6 months, and you just get it's not particularly pleasant to go through the process, but when you get to the end of it, mm-hmm. you feel amazing. Your brain fog just lifts. You hit 50, and I get a little flop fog from time to time, and it's just very pleasant when you go through a process where the fog lifts a little. So personally, though, I fast regularly 2 days a week. I do a 23-1, I just eat for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. On Mondays and Tuesdays, and then the rest of the week I eat normally. And I do that for two reasons, Eugene. One is I enjoy food, so I can, I can enjoy the rest of my week, but also just the health benefits are there for that.
Have you heard of heat shock protein and its implications for health, Greg, at all, as anti-aging and helping?
Yeah, I don't know so much about that, Eugene. I know certainly that these proteins are not just about heat; they're all about just basically it's shock more, right? It's actually these things jump into action whenever we put stress on our bodies.
Sauna increases longevity, and also, I mean, it might just, in the old days we thought it just relieved the body of these metabolic and also heavy metals and other toxins, but now we're realizing that it's again stimulating these very interesting kinases and intracellular messenger molecules that again help with cleaning, house cleaning, like you said, the cells. It's and fasting and sauna, these are traditions that we used in from the Native Americans to the Scandinavian. I mean, so many people would use the sauna and fasting. It's so important.
Yeah, it's and even And you go to the other side, and it's having the occasional cold shower is actually really good for us as well. So it's really, the body just likes a little bit of stress every now and again, not lots, but a little, and that just triggers these processes, which, like you say, the heat shock proteins get fired up, or we, with the cold therapy, the mitochondria fire up, we get that brown fat, which is the mitochondrial dense, the metabolically dense fat, which is really useful and healthy for us to have. So it's a beautiful thing what we're figuring out, and like you say, what got us almost rediscover some of the ancient practices that we used to do, fasting, the sauna, the cold, because we sit here and we don't know, and well, New Zealand is pretty mild, and in the States it gets a little cold up in your neck of the woods, but certainly a lot of people just move from heated room to heated room to heated car, and they don't get cold, and it's important, and likewise we eat all the time, and this fasting turns out to be super important, and our own biology is so finely tuned that if we can hack some of these things and do them, then that's actually the best, the cheapest, most accessible way of actually implementing an anti-aging strategy.
So how do people get in contact with you, and more importantly, get your book, The 9 Hallmarks of Aging, Greg?
Yeah, so through the 9hallmarksofaging.com, so pop over and have a look. I'm on Twitter at Greg McPherson. And I also have in the process of writing the book, have put together a whole bunch of, put together some supplements essentially for people, so that you can see that at srw.co. And we're really just essentially distilling what we know, and just giving people a really simple way to access that knowledge and with a range of supplements.
Great. Well, thanks for elucidating and educating the listeners and myself out there. I picked up a lot of good information, Greg. I keep researching, and I look forward to maybe having you on again soon to continue our discussion on anti-aging or proper aging. I like to call it proper aging because we are going to age.
Yeah, totally right. I think it should be proper aging.
I always say we want to arrive at our elder years in a Rolls Royce versus a beat-up jalopy, right?
You got it. Absolutely. Square the curve and avoid some of that decay and decline that we see with age. And like you say, just arrive with old age with vitality, and we've got the tools to do it now. It's really exciting.
Thank you, Greg. Cool. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z signing out, and stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye. Take care, Greg. Bye-bye.
Farewell. Thank you. Bye.